This is Mass Timber Today, and I'm Craig Applegath. This podcast explores the opportunities and challenges of sustainable mass timber construction with experts in the design, building, and forestry sectors. In this episode, I talk with Franco Piva of Ergodomus. Franco is well known as the Italian timber engineer, founding Ergodomus in 2007 and working on sustainable mass timber projects around the world. Today, Franco and I discuss mass timber as a low-carbon building option, the key challenges and opportunities for the adoption of sustainable mass timber, the role that architects and engineers play in furthering the practice of DFMA, design for manufacture and assembly, and the kinds of mass timber innovations Franco is seeing on mass timber projects around the world. I hope you enjoy our conversation. Franco, welcome to the Mass Timber Today podcast.
Thank you very much, Craig. It's my pleasure to be here.
You're internationally known in the world of mass timber for your work at Ergodomus, your engineering firm. So why don't you tell our listeners how you became interested in mass timber and how it became the focus of your career and your engineering practice?
Well, I can say that everything started more than 40 years ago, since I live in the Alps. Basically, my home, I'm surrounded by trees, forests. So I can say that timber was always a part of my life since the very beginning. Then when I grew up and I started the university, I decided, hey, why don't we make a job? And so I graduated in 2003, and I immediately, before completing the studies, let's say, I decided to focus on mass timber and prepare the master thesis about mass timber, and it was 2002. What I really liked of timber is that even when I was a child, it was possible to build something with my hands. Me and my brother, to build something. At the beginning, of course, it was just toys or very simple toys to play together. With steel, you can't do the same. With timber, you can really build your own.
Especially when you're a little kid.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
So what about mass timber is it that you find most compelling? What makes you so passionate about using it structurally?
Well, at the beginning, it was something more like, I love timber. That's it. Nothing else. But then after a few years, I realized that timber is something that can be digitized. So I combined together my two big passions, to be an engineer and to use new technologies, to always explore what new technologies can make to improve our life, to improve our the way we work. So I pretty soon realized that we can have something on the screen, and thanks to CNC machines, thanks to the robotic prefabrication, we will get that element on site. And those two things combined together, I can say that it was like a blast. When I realized it, I say, wow, I can make it. I can draw something in the screen, in my screen, and I will be 100% sure that this is what I will get on site, what I will give to my clients. And when I talk to non-engineers or people not in timber industry, not in the building industry, they look at me and they said, okay, and then what? This is something really amazing, and nothing wrong against concrete. But my colleagues, I have many colleagues working in the concrete industry, they go on site and they hope to see what they designed. They hope to find the steel rods exactly in that position, exactly with that diameter. While for the timber industry, this is something that it can happen theoretically, but technically, in reality, we can almost say that it never happens. So this is the biggest difference.
You mean that it's not precise? Mass timber is very precise.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. You can detail it down to the millimeter.
Personally, I'm not a perfectionist in my private life, but I know that I have to be a super perfectionist when we engineer a timber structure. If we draw something wrong here, there will be something wrong on site.
And Franco, why don't you provide our listeners with a picture of what you're doing now in the world of mass timber. What mass timber projects are you currently leading or involved with?
Well, we as a company, as an engineering firm, we started working internationally about 5 years ago in 2017. We're now working from North America to Australia. So we have also to deal with different time zones. At the moment, there are many projects we're working on, but the two I like the most, I hope the other clients will not get angry with me because I mentioned just two projects, but you know, I have to choose two of them. The one is in Singapore. We are almost at the end, I hope, on this project, of this project. And it is a canopy which will be built in Singapore in May, June 2023. It is a roof built between two skyscrapers above a square in Singapore. And we are going to have columns 25, 27 meters long. And at the top of those columns, there will be 8 arches connected together. And together, all together, they will create a beautiful view from below. And I'm very, very curious to see this this project. We've been working on it for more than 10 months. We started in January 2022. And we are still working, having weekly meetings with the client, with the assemblers, with the project managers. One of the most complicated part of the project was to be 100% sure how to assemble all the elements in the right sequence, considering the cranes they will have on site. All the elements will be produced in Europe and transported on a vessel to Singapore. So for sure, I want to fly there and to see how they are assembling it and to see the final results. And the second project is an office building, which will be built close to Copenhagen next year, always in summer 2023, late summer probably. And this is an 8-story office building. It will be one of the largest mass timber building in Europe. We're talking about 300,000 square feet.
That's a large project. That's a big project.
It is huge. I know that in Denmark, the other designers had to fight quite a lot with the municipalities, authorities to get the approval. We're talking about a building with something like 10,000 connections to design. And our scope of work is to design all those connections. They are quite repetitive, of course. We have to design all the connections and to prepare the production drawings. So the most complicated part of this project is how to value engineer the project. We cannot reduce the size of the elements because there was another company that previously made the preliminary analysis, and we have to stay with those sizes. But we are trying every day to find new ways to reduce the time they need to assemble the elements on site. And this is very exciting because we have to deal with the designers, with the project managers, and with the CLT and glulam manufacturers. So it is something we will learn a lot.
That's a significant project. What are the most compelling mass timber innovations you're seeing in your work? Innovations that will really move the design and engineering of mass timber forward?
Well, from an engineering perspective, I think that finally, in general, as designers, we started using more and more the software CAD/CAM in a wise way, I would say. Because we all know what ARCHICAD, ARPLAN, Revit, etc. are. But are we sure we are using in a good way, in a wise way, to make the project better and to help us to save time? I see timber as a material that can be seen as a digital material and can be very easily implemented in a workflow. So I think this is very compelling innovation at the moment on the market.
And I think that nicely leads into my next question about you becoming very well known for your innovative use of DFMA, designed for manufacture and assembly. Maybe you can talk about what this is all about and why it is important for mass timber design, engineering, and fabrication.
DFMA is the acronym I like the most when we talk about building industry. I'll tell you an example to explain what I really think is the good part of the DFMA. Almost every year, we work for the Biennale in Venice to build a pavilion, either for a famous artist or for the Biennale. And working in Venice, it is like working on a different planet for many aspects. If you forget something, if we design the building, the pavilion, and we forget one single screw or one bolt to connect together two elements, then this is a problem.
You have to go by Vaporetto to the outside of Venice and back again.
Correct. You got a point. Yeah. The time in Venice is different. It is not like, okay, I drive the car, I go to a shop, I buy something, and I go back to the site. In the normal world, it takes 1 hour, 2 hours, done. In Venice, you need to call maybe 10 shops to ask them if they have what you need. And they could tell you, oh, I don't have it, but a friend of mine has it, but maybe he's on the other side of the city. So every time we design something, we think, do they really get receive on-site every element, every single element they need to assemble all the timber members together? Will there be a problem on-site knowing how to connect together two different elements? DFMA, the letter F, could also be seen as another word to foresee the problem. You need to foresee what's going to happen on-site. If you forget something, then this will make the time on site much, much longer, many problems. They will call you from Venice or from wherever they are. We have a problem. We cannot assemble the elements because you forgot something in the factory or you forgot to draw something in the project. And thanks to the DFMA and having this mindset, this different mindset, you can foresee all those things and reduce the risk of having problems on site.
You know, it's interesting. I think one of the other things that a DFMA means for our profession, architecture and engineering, is that it places the responsibility for the actual final product squarely on the desk of the engineer and the architect. Traditionally, until now, architects and engineers have done their drawings, and then the shop drawings have been prepared by the trades that will be the things that they'll use to actually build the building. And it's the responsibility of the trades, the constructor and the trades, to make sure it's done. Now, with DFMA, you're drawing actually what will be constructed, period, end of story. So you're taking on that responsibility so that there's a lot of control, but there's also a lot of responsibility. And I think that's a really good thing. I mean, if the architects and engineers know what they're doing, that's the good responsibility to have. But I think it will also select the wheat from the chaff.
Yep, totally agree.
That's very exciting. What about sustainability? There's currently a lot of discussion about what makes mass timber a more environmentally responsible and sustainable building material than other materials. What's your take on this question?
Well, there are many, many conversation, let's say, about this all over the world. I think that it is true that timber is the most sustainable material we can use to build our buildings in the future. But we need to pay attention to one thing. We need to source the material, the trees, from sustainable forests. In some cases, during conferences or when I had meetings with other designers or builders, they were telling me, oh, look what is happening in Brazil or in other area. They are just cutting trees and they are destroying the environment. Are you doing the same? So I say, no, we are not doing this. We are sourcing the trees from sustainable forest, which means that they harvest 10,000 trees, but they plant more than 10,000 trees. If we look at what is happening in countries like Sweden, Finland, and Norway, well, especially Sweden and Finland, they produce every year millions of cubic meters of trees, but they are not without forests. And they've been doing this for years. And they are not running out of timber. So we need to use timber in a wise way, of course, and we need to keep this in mind.
Yeah, and I think one of the other things that goes along with the discussion of the sustainability of mass timber in terms of FSC and where it's harvested from is also its opportunity to lock up carbon and reduce embodied carbon. So maybe you could talk a little bit more about how mass timber and forests are a key part of the solution to carbon emissions and climate change.
Yeah, trees make it for free. Sometimes we forget it, but trees every day stores tons and tons of CO2 for free. We do not have to pay them to work. And this could also appear quite naive, but yes, they've been doing for thousands of years, millions of years. And they store the CO2 every single day of their life. When we cut them, when we cut logs to produce lamellas, to glulam, to produce glulam CLT, etc., we have in front of us CLT panel, but also we have a few tons of CO2. So every building is like a bank where we store tons of CO2 and they stay there. As I said before, we need to plant more trees than what we harvest. The new trees start again absorbing and storing CO2 for 20, 30 or 40 years. And then we start again, we cut the trees and we use for the buildings. So this is a very sustainable way to build the building in the future.
Yeah, and this is referred to as a biogenic carbon that's being locked up. And although it's controversial, even if you discount biogenic carbon, which is locking up carbon for the life of the building, the actual embodied carbon is lower as well. I think it's somewhere in the order of 14 to 23%, depending on the locale, lower embodied carbon, which is the carbon produced in cutting and shipping and manufacturing and so forth. What about the economics of mass timber, Franco? In most cities in Canada and the United States, mass timber is not considered the most economical building material. Why is that? And what needs to be done to make it an economical option, do you think?
Yeah. What happened to me many, many times, I cannot say daily, but quite often, everyone is happy to go for timber. Everyone is happy to use sustainable materials. Then all the decisions are driven by the money. So they are all happy. Then they see the cost. Okay, let's go for concrete, which is cheaper and I can find it very, very easily. I believe that for large scale building, we need to see DFMA as a way to value engineer the project. I see the DFMA like a value engineering tool. Based on that, we can, as engineers, architects, as designers in general, we have the power, let's say, to drive somehow, to decide somehow the cost of the building. And if we work together, all the designers together, to find, to explore new ways to reduce the cost, we can really make timber the most cost-effective solution to go for. I am not saying that we can reduce by 30, 40% the cost. The cost of timber per cubic meter, per square meter, will remain always the same. But we can find new ways to optimize the structural grid, to reduce as much as possible the thickness of the CLT, to reduce the impact of the penetrations of the mechanicals. A group of designers working together can really find a way to reduce the cost. We cannot expect to reduce the cost of timber by 20-30% in the next years. It will not happen, but we have different tools.
It's certainly not 20-30% more expensive than concrete and steel. It's somewhere in the order of, and it depends on the locale, right? Because on the West Coast, it's pretty much on par. Mm-hmm. What are the most inspiring mass timber projects you're seeing out there, and why are they inspiring for you?
Well, there were some projects that inspired me in the past and also recently. I've been using quite a lot LinkedIn for years to see how the timber market is evolving and what is happening all over the world. And I see that there are more and more skyscrapers made of timber or large-scale buildings. Here in Europe, we have in Norway is the tallest timber buildings in the world, which is, I think, 87 meters, included the canopy at the top. And it is a 100% timber building. They use concrete to add some weight to reduce the impact of the lateral acceleration because of the wind. But all the horizontal forces are taken by timber elements. So this is a very inspiring project, at least for an engineer, it's very exciting to see it. And another project, which was quite innovative as well, is in Vancouver, is a student home. And there are two concrete shafts. It was, I think, one of the very first, or maybe the first, hybrid skyscraper in the world. It was partially made of timber and partially made of concrete. So I think there are those two projects, but then there are many, many other projects to inspire us.
On that note, what kinds of building types could be engineered with mass timber but currently aren't? And how do we get there?
Well, I think that we can... In my opinion, there are no limits in terms of can we do this with timber, can we not do this with timber. If we go for a hybrid, I think that we can expand what we can do with mass timber because we can combine together different materials. For instance, the project we're working on in Denmark, the largest one, we teamed up with your company, Craig, with Dialogue to work together on this project. And it is a hybrid. And this project proves what we can do using concrete and timber combined together. And also the system you developed for the skyscraper is a combination of concrete, steel, and timber. So based on that...
Oh, the hybrid wood tower.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. I think that these new technologies and this mix of materials allows us to really push the boundaries and to think bigger and not to see limitations, something like, okay, up to 3 stories, up to 4 stories. No, let's go for timber and increase the size of the buildings we can build.
So you've talked about opportunities. What about challenges on the flip side of the coin? What do you see as being the most important challenges and how should we address them?
Well, the challenge is that we should create a new generation of well-educated designers, architects, engineers, mechanical engineers with a knowledge of timber, with a knowledge of what can we do with timber, what we cannot do with timber, what is it better. How can we value engineer the projects? If we try to Google books for concrete, to design concrete, books to design steel, you can find thousands of books, thousands of publications, PDF files. There is a library for those two materials. While if you do the same for timber, there are just a few documents. And if we can together try to fill this gap, then this will be the biggest challenge in the next years. The more the designers know about timber, the more they will try to go for timber for their projects. This is why I'm proudly a member of the Timber Research Network, which is something that was born just a few weeks ago, we can say. And this could be a way to develop this knowledge and to share this knowledge. It is very, very important to share the knowledge. Without sharing this knowledge, designers will not go for timber.
And that the Timber Research Network is something that's going to be available on LinkedIn.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. It will be a digital group. I hope there will be high-level discussions, high-level conversations among international engineers, international designers, ready to share their knowledge, to share info about their projects. I mean, there will always be secrets in the company. How can we optimize the workflow? How can we share the files in a specific way with the clients? But there are some basic things that we have to share with the other designers. This is the aim. This is the scope of this group.
That's a good segue, Franco, to wrap up our conversation. I'd like to ask you, what are the three articles, websites, or books related to mass timber you would like to recommend to listeners and why?
The first article is something we recently worked on together. We wrote together with you, Craig, 10 reasons to go for mass timber.
I'll agree to that. That's a good article.
The most complicated part of writing this article was why only 10? So there are so many good and valid reasons to go for timber. Personally, I do not see any reason to say, okay, I go for another material. I've been using timber. I've been engineering timber for almost 20 years. And every time I go on site, I tell you a secret. Everyone does it. Every time I go, I touch CLT or I touch the columns, the beams. Everyone likes the feeling you have when you touch a piece of timber.
Biophilia.
So I'm sure that 10 reason plus one is because we like to touch it, because we like to see timber, because we feel better when we are in a room surrounded by timber. Then the second good website, which is not there yet, but I'm sure that the website, the group of the Timber Research Network, will be one of the place to go in a while and to find articles, materials, resources, documents written by professionals in the world. And then the third one, let me please allow to say that I've been working on a book in English. Well, it is actually in Italian. It was published a couple of years ago, but Italy is a small market. They sold more than 600 copies, which is amazing for such a technical book in a small country. I've been working on the English version for a while, and hopefully, if I will find the time, and I have to, hopefully the English version will be ready in the second semester 2023. So I hope we will have another podcast like this one
to talk about the book. Yes, for sure. That's a nice way to finish up. And I'd like to ask as a sort of a concluding question, what advice would you offer to our listeners about how they could shift into using mass timber on their building projects?
Well, first of all, they have to be, I cannot say a bit crazy, but they have to be innovative. They have to be to say something, okay, let's go for something different. Let's go out of my comfort zone and try to use another material. I know that many designers at the beginning are quite skeptical, but I invite all the designers, all the skeptical designers, builders, developers, etc., to take their time to go to a site and to make a tour and to see how fast they can build a timber building, how clean is the site. They will not see outside the site tons of debris, tons of concrete bricks smashed together. Everything will be clean. And another aspect that it is not always taken into consideration, almost no noises in the site. You will hear some noises, of course, but nothing compared to a traditional site. So I invite every designer to go and see this a site next to their home. Now it is very easy to find sites where they are building timber buildings. 20 years ago, it was very complicated, but now it is much, much easier.
Thanks very much for your time, Franco. It was a lot of fun today.
Thanks to you, Greg. It was a really pleasure to have this interview with you.
The Mass Timber Today podcast is produced by the Mass Timber Institute at the University of Toronto's John H. Daniels Faculty of Architecture, Landscape and Design. Each podcast explores the opportunities and challenges of mass timber with experts in the design, building, and forestry sectors to shed light on the future of sustainable mass timber construction. You can find show notes, including references mentioned in this podcast, on our website at masstimberinstitute.ca, where you can also view our current projects and subscribe to our MTI newsletter. This episode was edited by Derek Welsman and produced by Sean Shukla at the Mass Timber Institute. We'd also like to give a special thanks to Dialogue for their generous sponsorship of this podcast. If you like this podcast, please rate us at the Apple iTunes ranking site. You can also reach us on our website, and we'd love to hear from you with any suggestions for future interviews.